I asked Dr. Werner von Braun if he'd ever seen a flying saucer, and his reply...
The only flying saucer that I've ever seen was in a kitchen when I started an argument with my wife.
Here we are, the weekend after Thanksgiving. My name is Don Ecker. The show is UFOs Tonight, and you are joining us right here. Well, a couple of announcements. Tonight, Dwight is not with us. He is back in Indianapolis, Indiana, starring at a Star Trek convention. However, Vicki is here, all ready to do her UFO landing pad. I am your host, and we have a very special guest tonight. However, before I introduce tonight's guest, I got to ask you a question. Have you gone outside and taken a look at the moon lately? Well, out here in Southern California, I got to tell you, the moon isn't looking too good tonight. It's just a crescent, and it's pretty hazy. But how many times have you gone out and looked at the moon when it was nice and full and clear? Perhaps you even have a telescope, and you've taken it out, and you've looked at the craters on the moon, and you've wondered... Geez, it's hard to imagine that human beings have walked there. But are human beings the only ones that have walked there? Do you know that for the last several hundred years, with astronomers over the last two centuries have reported seeing many strange sights on the moon? They've seen lights that flash intermittently, lights that cannot be explained. They've seen structures that appear like domes, and they've been in one place for a while, and then perhaps a few weeks later, they're in another place. Do you know that astronomers, especially a number of years ago in Japan, even photographed a shadow flying across the moon? I have a videotape of it at home. And did you know that according to sources now no longer with NASA, but at one point within NASA, that came out after the Apollo missions and claimed that our astronauts indeed did see something on the moon, something that was artificial and something that very unlikely had ever been manufactured by humans. But somebody else put it up there. Well, in 1979, a very amazing book was published by an author by the name of George H. Leonard. The name of the book, Somebody Else is on the Moon. I know that we've done on this program over the last couple of years a number of shows on lunar phenomena and transient lunar phenomenon. And George Leonard was one of the people that we've mentioned very frequently. Well, tonight's guest is a gentleman who back in 1979, because of a little arm twisting that a friend of his performed on him, took George Leonard's book home, read it, was amazed, and then later he and his friend decided to approach NASA to find out if they could in fact get their hands on the photographs that Leonard mentioned in his book, Somebody Else is on the Moon. My guest this evening is a gentleman that is now residing in Texas. His name is Vito Sicari. A number of months ago, when this story first really surfaced publicly, I told you that I was going to try to get Vito on the show. We connected, but because of other commitments, he wasn't able to do it until tonight. And at this point, I would like to bring him on the air and welcome him to the show. Vito, good evening, and it's a great pleasure to have you here.
Hello,
Hello, Don. How are you?
We're doing just fine.
Well, can you hear me okay down here?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
All right. Thank you.
As a matter of fact, let me turn up my earphones here a little bit and see if I can hear you better. How's that?
Okay, fine. I can hear you just fine.
Okay, Vito, your background is in the engineering sector, isn't it?
That's right. I'm a mechanical engineer from the petrochemical industry.
Right. And in 1979, were you at that point, I know that now you have your own company, but were you working for another company at that point?
Yes, I was working for a privately owned engineering firm that was doing business with some of the Venezuelan oil companies.
Okay, now it's a far cry from mechanical engineering to investigating lunar phenomenon and perhaps even UFOs.
That's right.
But why don't you kind of give us a rundown on what transpired there?
Well, back in 79, we had a client down in Venezuela who decided to take a trip to the Houston area to inspect, ostensibly to inspect some of the equipment that we were designing and building for the plant. His name is Lester Howes. He's a fellow engineer. He is an American, and he was working in Venezuela for the Venezuelan oil companies. Now, when he came up to the States, we got to know each other. We had been conversing back and forth by telex for a few years, but had never actually met. When he came up to Houston, we met and sat down and got to know each other. And after a few days, he confided in me that he had an ulterior motive for coming to Houston. He had never been to Houston before, but he knew we had the Johnson Spacecraft Center down here, the NASA thing. And he told me that he wanted me to keep an open mind when he told me, but he introduced me to the book Someone Else is on the Moon by George Leonard. He told me that he himself was an amateur astronomer, so to speak, and actually a ufologist, although I don't know if anyone was using the word in those days. And he wanted my help in trying to get to these pictures. Primarily, I think, because I was the only one that he knew in Houston.
Well, prior to your reading the book, did you think that this guy was firing on all six cylinders, or did you think...
No, we thought... we honestly were trying to find ways from laughing, you know, because we thought this was ridiculous.
Well, what was it that turned you around that there might be something to it?
Well, he lent me the book to read it overnight. He said, read it first and then tell me what you think. The book was published in 76 by George Leonard. And when I read through that thing, you know, Lester had portions of it marked up in yellow, and he had written in the margins and all that sort of stuff. And he had it held together by a rubber band because he had read it through so many times that it was a dilapidated condition. However, I was impressed by Leonard's work and what he had uncovered, and it was a very professional, very methodical approach. And the more and the deeper I got into it, the more it started making sense that this was a possibility, especially when you got through his bibliography and his references, some of which are easily to verify and check out. So I came to the conclusion, well, I'm not sure if I believe it, but there is something here that's worth pursuing. You know, it is worth an investigation. And I got permission from the company to take a few, you know, some time off, spend man hours helping our client to see what we can do to track these photos down at NASA. And it all started from there.
Okay, so you took the book home, you read it that evening, the next day you got in touch with your friend Lester, and then you guys decided to approach NASA.
Yeah,
NASA is the Civilian Space Agency, right?
Well, supposedly it's a civilian space agency, that's right. In 1979, there were a lot of, there were a lot of changes that have taken place over the years, but in 1979, the public was, had free access to NASA. You could drive right into the place and park and go over to the visitor center that you had to do and, start a dialogue with them. Today you can no longer do that. The public can't get on the base at all. But in 79, we went into NASA. We did not have a plan. We didn't have an agenda. But we went to the only...
In essence, you thought you'd go in and you'd say, hey guys, we'd like to see these photographs.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was. We had no way of knowing at that time that there was another agency known as the Lunar Planetary Institute. I don't know if your audience is familiar with it. But there were two organizations. There's NASA and there's the Lunar Planetary Institute. And unknown to us at the time. All of the records, all of the documents, all of the photographs, all of the transcripts, the entire repository had been transferred out of NASA and onto another civilian agency known as the Lunar Planetary Institute, which was located off-site. It was not on the NASA complex.
Now, was this a subsidiary, if you will, of NASA, or was this a completely private contracted enterprise?
Completely private. It was a completely private, a standalone organization.
Okay.
And it also went by the name of the Lunar Lander Observatory. But it officially, it's the Lunar Planetary Institute. And it was located in a separate building on an adjacent piece of property to the east of the NASA property. And it was off-site. But we didn't know about that at the time, and it took the NASA people more than 2.5 weeks to tell us about it.
Why 2.5 weeks, Vito?
I don't know.
Well, what were they telling you for 2.5 weeks?
Well, in the very beginning, we were running into people who honestly didn't know what we were talking about. I got the impression many of them had never given any thought to where such a repository might be, if it exists at all. So they didn't know what to do with us. We simply got passed up the line to higher and higher levels of management.
So, in essence, you're saying you got the bureaucratic the shuffle.
Did we ever, yeah. And the higher up we went, the more resistance we ran into.
Into seeing these publicly, or they were supposed to have been publicly available photographs.
That is correct. That was the main thrust of our argument back at that time. But the higher up we went, it seemed that the more resistance we were meeting to get to these photographs. And they started coming up with arguments about how it's classified information, how you folks shouldn't really be seeing this.
Classified?
Yeah, that was the key word that.
Now, who was telling you these photographs were classified?
The management the upper management inside NASA. They were using words like classified and that sort of thing. And that's when we changed our tactics. Up to then, we had been just pretty polite and ongoing and all that sort of stuff. But we were getting kind of tired.
Well, you mentioned, of course, that the Apollo program was not a Department of Defense program, I would imagine.
Yeah,
this was a NASA, the NASA civilian space program. Oh, I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah,
that's
what the public has been told.
Right,
the public never even knew of the Lunar Planetary Institute.
Right, but I'm trying to figure out how they could justify claiming that these photographs were classified.
Well, they couldn't, and that became the argument. We were looking for something we could use, and that became the tool. Less jumped in and said, wait a minute, when you use things like classified, are you guys a civilian agency or are you guys a military agency? And there was silence in the room, you know what I mean? And then we followed up with that by saying, classified, you're using military terms here. What's so classified about this stuff? You guys are supposed to be a civilian agency, you're running on taxpayer money. Well, guess what, fellas? The taxpayers are here. We'd like to see our pictures. Bring out the guy who's got them. Or bring out the guy who has classified them. We want to talk to him. And this went on and on and on. And then finally, we lowered the boom on them. We pulled the book out. They didn't know about the book. When we showed them the book by Leonard and showed them the photographs, they fell out of their chair, and we followed this up by saying, now what's so classified about pictures that have already been published?
Well, and before you tell us their answer, Vito, mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you to stand by a minute. We've got to take a quick break.
Sure.
We're back with my guest, Vito Sicari. Vito.
Yes.
Okay, so you're down there, you're trying to get these guys to own up to the fact that these photographs, in fact, are public domain?
Well, we were trying to get half of them to own up to the fact that the photographs even exist. They were telling us initially that these are just, rumors and stories and these things don't really exist. And And then the other half of the people were saying, well, if they did exist, they would be classified as data. We wouldn't have them. You couldn't see them anyway. And basically, that's when the debates started. That's when we got into pulling out the book and spraying it on them. And half of them were angry that we didn't tell them about the book until they committed themselves. We had to sort of caught them with their pants down around their knees.
And they absolutely had no information about this book.
Many of them did not. Yeah, it looks like, and as we got deeper into it, it looks like this book had been on and whisked off the market so quickly. I think it's fair to say the great majority of the American public never heard of the book. And that includes the individuals, or a lot of the individuals who worked for NASA. So they were surprised that these pictures did exist themselves.
Well, you know, I personally do have that book, and you know, I just recently reread Leonard's book once again.
Yeah.
And I've probably gone through that thing now a half dozen or more times, Vito.
Mm-hmm.
And evidently, at that point when he was doing the research on this material, he had several inside sources within NASA.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the only way he could have done it. That's exactly right. That was the only way I'm sure he could have done it. And I'm sure they were giving him some good information, because there was no other way they could publish it.
Okay, so you caught these fellows basically in a bald-faced lie. So
right.
What happened next?
Well, this had been going on for a few days, and what happened next was what I call, I guess, the play for time. Okay. The only thing they could decide to do was that they needed time to decide what the next move was going to be. So they told us, okay, you're going to have to fill out some questionnaires. And I could see, picture some guy, you know, sitting up all night in the back room somewhere dreaming up these questions, because they asked just a bunch of questions. We filled out more paper than you can believe. It was terrible. It was enough to give a woodpecker a headache, let me tell you.
Did you have any access to any media outlets then that you could take this incredible story to?
No, and that was some of the emphasis behind the questions. Sprinkled among the questions they were asking were questions like, are you affiliated with the news media? Are you an author? Are you a news reporter? Do you have intentions of publishing anything? That sort of thing. They were quite concerned about that. And this was sprinkled in between the usual questions like, you know, are you now or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party? Are you looking to overthrow the United States government?
To see these moon photos?
Yeah, and what's your grandmother's maiden name? You know, they wanted the whole family tree here, you know.
Did you?
We went through just a bunch of questions. And I suspect that this gave them the excuse to say, well, now we're going to need time, you know, to review this.
Did you take this to later on to either your state representative or senator?
No, we never did. No, we never did. His reasons for it, which at the end of the story, you see what our final position was.
Okay.
Essentially, they had us there just hours filling out stuff that they then used to say we're going to need time to review all of this stuff, and they started, I guess, some sort of a low-level investigation. They had called my employer to verify my employment, that sort of thing, to make sure we were who we said we were. You know, they wanted to satisfy themselves that...
Now, this is NASA, not the CIA or
no,
the FBI, right?
Yeah, this is NASA, exactly. And we went with this. We went along with this. And we had decided that this was getting personal now, you know what I mean? Once they had lied to us, we were taking offense to it, so we decided we're going to go to the mat with these fellows. And eventually, after 3 or 4 days, they came, gave us back a ring and said, okay, come on back and let's talk. So we did. And that's when I think they sent us on what I call the wild goose chase. I think the plan was, let's try to get rid of these guys by scaring the hell out of them. Because otherwise there was no other way we were going to give it up. So they acknowledged that the moon pictures exist. And we could see them in the library, but they still had not told us about the Lunar Planetary Institute. They explained that the library was on the other side of the NASA property in building number, whatever it was, 31 or 34, I honestly don't remember these days. There's a tremendous number of buildings spread out over a few hundred acres on the complex. Every building has a number, but they're not consecutive. Building number 2 is sitting next to, right alongside building number 26. You see what I mean?
Yes.
So it's all scattered. It's all random.
It's probably to throw off Soviet spies, Vito.
Well, whatever. I mean, you literally need a map to get around there, and basically they just pointed in that direction and said, well, go that way and you'll find building so-and-so. And that's where the library is, and that's where the pictures are going to be. And we said, okay, they wouldn't let us drive it. We had to walk it. And I don't know if you're familiar with the 110-degree weather we can get in Texas sometimes. But we were in three-piece business suits trying to walk around this place, and I'll tell you, we were dragging anchor after 20 minutes, looking for anything that looked like the building we were looking for, until we finally came across it, and to our surprise, there were two of them. There was a 31A and a 31B, and they had only told us about building 31, I think it was. So we took our chances and went in with 31A and found it completely empty. Absolutely nothing.
Actually, this is not funny, but it is.
Oh, we were angry. Let me tell you, this place was empty. Zilch. There was it did appear that there at one time had been something in there. But whatever had been in there had been taken out.
Now, remember, Vito, we're talking about our open civilian space agency.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
It was so open, the building was empty. But there were old electric cables hanging from the ceiling, that sort of thing. You know, a few leftover display cases, desks. There was a space suit or something that looked like it had been part of an exhibit stuck in a corner somewhere. I mean, but for all practical purposes, this was empty. So we came out of 31A and decided, well, they must mean 31B, next one. And we walked into 31B and found ourselves in the middle of a high security area where the public is not allowed to be during an operation. In those days, you were allowed to take a tour, for example, but you could only go to certain buildings where they didn't have anything going on. You follow me?
Yes.
If they actually had an operation going on, you couldn't go in there. So we walked into the middle of the what I call the Jupiter team. I don't know if you remember the Voyager 2.
Yes, I do.
Satellite mission. Well, we walked in there, and they've got this ongoing mission, and they've got they're sitting around all these computer terminals and screaming and applauding and celebrating because the photos from the Jupiter 2 mission were just coming in. It was during that time period.
Uh huh.
And boy, they were ecstatic. And, as these photos were coming in, this was the first time these photos had ever been seen. You know, this was brand new, real-time, at-the-moment stuff. Okay?
And if my memory serves me, I believe that they were releasing those to the public as fast as they came in.
They may have been, but we were there when they were coming in. See what I mean?
Yes.
We had the red spot of Jupiter. We had it all. And they were so ecstatic, so excited, that they really didn't notice us at all. You know, we sort of blended in with the furniture and eventually got into the conversation. One technician would turn around, look at us and say something like, "What do you think of that?" You know, and then we'd look at it and say, "Oh yeah, it's great." You know, and we were trying to be invisible. You know,
and nobody had a clue who you were.
Nobody had a clue, and they were all these contractors and from various companies and project managers, project directors, project engineers, computer engineers, secretary, everybody who had ever had anything to do with the Voyager project was there, because today this was it, you know what I mean? This was their culmination after years of work. This week was the week they were getting their stuff, and we were right flat smack in the middle of it. And after about 20 minutes, Lester decided to, test the water, so to speak, and he made a statement which, for that particular team, was totally inappropriate. He said something like, and what do you think of those moon pictures, you know? and by the way, are they in this building somewhere? And they turned around and they looked with a very puzzled look on their face. Wait a minute, that's the Lunar Project. This is the Jupiter Project. hey, who are you guys? When they found out we didn't belong there, the whole environment changed. They clammed up like a shell. Nobody would say anything. Drawers were slamming shut. They were covering stuff on the desk. They were putting these little blankets over the CRT terminals. You know, you couldn't see anything. It was a big discussion. We were trying to explain who we were, what we were doing there. We had been sent to there, all that sort of stuff. Somebody shoved a phone in my hand, and there was a guy on the other end saying, you know, I'm Mr. So-and-so. Who are you guys? What are you doing there? And how did you get past the civilian sector? And what's this thing about taxpayers, moon pictures? Just who are you fellas? They didn't know we were coming, see? And they said, okay, stay right where you are. We're coming. And less than 5 minutes, we had an escort. Some security groups were in there, and this got to be a real, you know, Chinese fire drill. So we countered by pulling out the book again, and we started passing the book around. And when we passed the book around, that's when it all came down. They escorted us out of the building, and we not only got escorted out of the building, we flat got kicked out of the whole complex. We were asked to leave. And naturally, nobody at the administration building who had sent us over there was available.
Nobody would own up.
Nobody was on the phone. Yeah, they would call over to try to verify what we were telling them. There was nobody on the other end who was ready to say, we sent those guys over there. We were in the sheep dip, and boy, it hit the fan. They were reading the riot act, you're breaking violation of federal code, so-and-so, and this and that, you know. And as I look back on it, I genuinely believe it was just a setup designed to scare us out of there and don't come back.
Well, Vito, we're going to have to stop right there because we're at the bottom of the hour. We're okay, we're back and back to the show. Vito, we are back online.
Okey-doke.
Let's get back to this story because I got to tell you, I am enjoying this to no end.
Well, we weren't enjoying it then, I can tell you. We were angry. So
they're hustling you off under federal code.
Yeah.
Basically giving you a boot.
And literally. As I look back in hindsight, I think we're probably the only two guys who ever got kicked out of NASA. as I look back in hindsight, though, I think it was a calculated thing designed to, you know, either get us in trouble or scare the hell out of us. I don't think they actually had any genuine intentions of prosecuting or anything like that. You follow me?
Yeah.
I think they were just trying to scare us off, you know, is what it came down to, hoping we wouldn't come back. But the next morning, we were all over the phones, and we were calling, and boy, we were angry. And they couldn't apologize fast enough, long enough, hard enough. You know what I mean? They were tripping over their feet, apologizing for the mix-up. They explained that the library and the entire repository actually had been there, but it had been moved out 6 months earlier, and nobody told them about it, and all that sort of stuff. And we were threatening to, I was bluffing, actually. I said, we're in the process right now of making a 1,000 Xerox copies of this book, and we're going to spread it to everybody in NASA. You know, we're tired of playing button, who's got the button with you fellas on this thing? So they finally said, okay, we're going to make arrangements for you to get to the library. And they explained that it was off-site, and it had been moved to a place called the Lunar Lander Observatory.
Now, was this an actual astronomical observatory?
We thought it was, because by the name Lunar Lander Observatory, we were picturing a building that has, you know, a dome on the top.
Right.
And a telescope sticking out. You follow me?
Right.
And they explained, they didn't call it the Lunar Planetary Institute, they called it the Lunar Lander Observatory. And they said, if you wait two more days, they'll be expecting you at 9 in the morning, and we got there at 8, okay? We tried to get there. Now, they explained where to find this place. You were supposed to drive down the road and go past NASA, and as you pass NASA, their east battery limit, you're going to find the Lunar Lander Observatory. So we did. We went down that road, and instead of turning into NASA, we just kept going. When we got to the end of the NASA property, it was nothing but a forest. a very thick, dense woods, forest. And you couldn't see anything into that. You couldn't see anything from the road. So we thought, well, maybe it's further down. So we just kept going and going. And before you know it, we're crossing bridges and we're into the goddamn Gulf of Mexico. So we literally had to come back and forth, up and down this road, angry as hell that they had done it to us again, you know what I mean? Because we thought maybe they were making up this whole thing and there really isn't a lunar lander observatory up there. Anyway, on the third or maybe the fourth pass, Lester noticed a small dirt road that came 90 degrees to the main road. Okay?
Right.
And on this dirt road, the forest was on its right and on its left. You couldn't see into it. It was just a very dark dirt road. It was right at the end of the NASA property line and adjacent to their property line. So it went down into the property as you were driving by, okay? On the main road.
And right.
All it had is
obviously not marked with a sign or anything.
Well, there was a sign. There was a small two little posts in front of the dirt road. They were maybe a foot and a half high, with a little chain link thing that went across and a sign on it that said, no trespassing. So we decided that's got to be it. After everything we've been through, that's got to be the place. We took that chain link thing down and we drove down that dirt road. And we probably went somewhere between half and three quarters of a mile and made a large U-turn back to the right. And now we were heading back to the main road. And in all that time, we didn't see nothing but trees. But eventually, this road makes a sort of a dog leg to the left, and it takes you and you wind up in front of just a beautiful two-story building, old architecture, heavy stoneware, you know, that type of work.
Right.
We wound up in the parking lot, and there's nothing on the building. There's no number, there's no mailbox, nothing. We find our way to the front door, and on the front door there's just a little plaque, maybe half-inch high letters, and it says Lunar Planetary Institute. So we knew this was the place, okay?
Right.
The front door is left of center in the building. It's not in the middle of the building, it's left of center. So when you walk in the front door, all of the activity is off to your right. You follow me?
Yep.
They had a main hall off to the right with a lot of activity. People were walking back and forth. There were meetings going on. There was a large desk. There was people carrying computer printouts, that sort of thing. And off to our left was a small archway. It looked like someplace the janitor might put his stuff. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
When we told them we were looking for the Lunar Lander Library, they pointed to that archway and said, well, you know, that's where you have to go. And this led us to another door, which took us down a winding stairway into a tunnel. We were now at the bottom of a winding stairway in a very dark tunnel.
And this was underground?
Yeah, this was underground. And it was dark as all hell, except for a string of light bulbs along the top, okay? It was the roof was not flat, it was circular. All right?
Gotcha.
And as you walk down this thing, they had these very dimly lit 25-watt type bulbs, you know. And everything was looked like it was painted black. We couldn't see anything. We just walked down this tunnel. And we walked two abreast. It was wide enough for two guys, okay? And this thing eventually led us to a room, an open room. And the tunnel led into the room on the left of center. And in that room was a rather large room. We found right directly in front of us is a wall-to-wall countertop so that you can't get past the counter. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
On the other side of the counter is a fellow sitting there, and he's the librarian. And I seem to remember his name was Roger, but I can't for the life of me remember his last name. And this was the guy you had to get to. This is the only fellow in the entire complex that has the authority to handle the pictures. And he's got, you know, every picture NASA has ever taken of anything back there somewhere. This is the repository.
Now, this was strictly with lunar missions. Not the other missions, right?
As he explained it, everything was in there.
Oh, okay.
Everything, this was the complete repository.
Of all of NASA's photographs?
If they ever shook hands with somebody and took a picture of it, he had it.
Okay.
Okay? But every picture is as you know, has its own identification number. That's how they file it away.
Well, so far everything's looking good because George Leonard had all these photographs numbered.
Exactly.
Okay.
And we felt we had finally hit pay dirt. So we said, okay, we would like to see certain photos, and he explained you can't see any photos unless you have the number, and he was kind of surprised that we had the numbers because, of course, he didn't know we had the book, right?
Right.
We give him a list of numbers, and it takes him maybe 5 seconds to browse the room, and he says, well, these numbers won't do you any good. And he went on to explain, as he put it, for security purposes, NASA had the country at that time split up into 5 regions. Each region had its own repository with a complete set of everything. Each region had its own librarian, but each region also had its own individual numbering system. It's like they all had a different Dewey Decimal System type of thing. Follow me?
Yeah, but that certainly doesn't seem to make any sense.
Well, that's the way he explained it.
Okay.
Okay, I don't know why they had it done that way. He didn't go on to explain why, but each region of the country had a different numbering system. The numbers that Leonard had in his book were for a different region. I think the East Coast.
Right.
You see what I mean?
Right.
And subsequently, we asked, well, there's got to be a master list. It's got to be somewhere to correlate the numbers from one region.
Now, you're
another.
Thinking like a mechanical engineer, right?
Yeah. I mean, it would be logical that there has to be a way of getting from one system to the other. You follow me? I mean, in engineering, we would expect it. So he explained, yeah, there is. There is a master list, but he himself, the librarian, does not have it. He would have to go to higher authority to get it.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And so naturally, the question was, well, where do we have to go to get it? And then he told us, master list is in Langley, Virginia.
Langley, Virginia.
Langley, Virginia.
I didn't realize NASA had a large facility there.
Well, I don't know of any. There's only one agency. There's only one place that we know of in Langley, Virginia, okay? Everything else is referred to apparently as McLean, Virginia. Apparently it's a city with two names, if I got that straight.
Uh-huh.
And if you're talking about something, it's McLean, and if you're talking about the other stuff, it's Langley, okay? But in any event, we had to fill out some forms that had to be sent to Langley. Giving them the numbers we had and requesting permission to get the corresponding numbers for the Houston region.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is your publicly funded government at work. I want you to know I think this is just superb. This is super, Vito. I can't wait to do more, but we're at that break time.
Clear, 7, go ahead.
I told you at 10 o'clock high.
This is Houston. Say again, 7.
We have a bogey at 10 o'clock high.
Roger.
Chile Control here again. The reference in that conversation was bogey. It was Mormon Moon reported citing the bogey. This is Gemini Control, Houston, at 4 hours, 24 minutes into the flight.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, NASA knows about unidentified flying objects. Of course, they claim they don't, so maybe that means that they're really telling the truth, because they're not unidentified. Have you ever thought about that? Vito, did you ever hear that clip before?
No, I never have.
Yeah, Frank Borman, Gemini 7. He was talking about the bogey he saw.
I'm not surprised.
Maybe they're not UFOs. Maybe they're IACs, as one guy called them. Identified alien craft. Who knows? Anyway, to get back to this fantastic story, so the master list of all these photographs are residing in Langley, Virginia.
That's what they told me.
You don't think it could be at that big building with Christians in Action on the front of it? CIA, Christians in Action?
I have my own idea of what it meant to me. That's all I can say. I don't want to go on, you know. No one told me the name of the building. They
okay.
just said Langley. And that was it. And the impression I got was that should be enough. And I gotta tell you, that was the first time in the entire ordeal, we're now 2.5 weeks into this, that was the first time we sort of were stunned a little bit and said, wait a minute, maybe we should reevaluate this here. So we kind of went off to the corner and discussed this, and should we do this? Do we really want to do this? That sort of thing, you know. And we decided, yeah, let's go for it. We're going to, what the hell? You know, these things have already been published anyway. What the heck can
Well, you've already invested a half
exactly.
a month.
Sure. So we decided we're going to do it. So we told the librarian, okay, well, you have to expose yourself to them by filling out your form. You follow me?
Right.
So now they've got your name, your number. I mean, they know who you are. They know what you want, that type of thing.
Hey, well, they already had you
And they had
paid.
Everything anyway,
you,
really.
Yeah, they already had you guys paid.
Sure. So we decided to go for it, and we had to wait an extra day for them to find the forms, because nobody had ever gotten this far with it, you know. So they finally found the forms a day later, and we filled the stuff out, and they sent it in, and in about 3 days, they called us back and said, okay, we have the permission, and we've got the corresponding numbers. And you can come down tomorrow morning, and we can begin, and we'll give you 3 days. And we scratched our head because, hell, there were only 40 pictures in the book, you know what I mean?
Right.
3 days seems like a long time, but they had some rules. They said, you got to understand, we have certain procedures, and it's up to you. You can decide yes or no. We'll let you come down. We'll let you look at the stuff, but here are the rules. No recording equipment. No cameras, no pencils, no pens, no papers, no pads, no notebooks, no calculators, nothing. The only thing we would be permitted to go in with is a small magnifying glass, like a jeweler's loop.
Right.
And we were allowed to bring the book because that was our property anyway, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We asked about the book. And that was it. When we went back the following day, we were pretty excited. We got back into the room, having gone through the tunnel, and when we got there, one of the walls off to our left was open. It turns out to be a false panel. And behind that panel is another room. And in that room, they had five almost full-length conference room tables. And they were shaped in a U pattern, two going up, one across the back, and then two coming down, okay? And laid out in all of along that U-shaped configuration were all of the photographs that we had requested, and apparently a hell of a lot more, because as it turns out, some of the photos that Leonard had in his book were actually what they call the base photos. The computer had picked up so many anomalies that it triggered a sequence of additional photos in sort of a zoom sequence. And apparently when he went to pick those...
No, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What you're saying is mm-hmm. that from the lunar orbiter mm-hmm. spacecraft,
mm-hmm.
it was tracking the moon, and the onboard computer would trigger a camera when it saw something it was interested in.
Yeah. See, they weren't sure they were going to get the unmanned craft back. They didn't know if it would ever, in case of an accident, if it burns up in the atmosphere, that type of thing. You remember these things had to land in the ocean.
Right.
With parachutes and all that stuff. So what they were doing is they were taking the photos and they were developing them on board. And then they were transmitting them back to Earth before the spacecraft ever came back.
Right.
This way they would at least have the pictures, even if they lose the capsule.
So if...
Well, as the computer that was analyzing these photos would scan them, every time it would pick up an anomaly, that triggered another sequence of photos.
Okay.
And sometimes, and that sequence became a zoom sequence. It got closer and closer and closer and closer.
Well, I wanted to make sure that was clear for the audience.
Yeah, okay, I see. And I did not know, we didn't know we were going to get those. But apparently when you get the first number of the photos tells them what other photos are part of that package, you see? Part
right.
of that series.
Right.
So there was somewhere between 1 and 2,000 photos.
And Leonard had only been aware of 40.
That's right. We were looking at more photos than he had ever seen. And that's why we needed 3 days. That's why they were giving us the 3 days. You follow me? So we started. Oh, we also had to be escorted in and escorted out, that type of thing.
By armed guards?
No, these guys were dressed in suits, and we were never searched or anything like that. But, you know, you went in escorted, you came out escorted. If you needed to take a rest or a bathroom break or something like that, you came out, they came out, that type of thing.
What were they afraid you were going to do?
I have no idea. You know,
Well, for something...
This was simply their procedure. This was their civilian...
Now, this is certainly not like, for example, going to the FBI series of buildings, you know, the complex of buildings or the CIA, but this seems pretty draconian for NASA, for something that was supposed to be publicly, publicly available.
Publicly accessible, that's correct. Anyway, that's how it was. That was the situation.
Okay.
Now, we were very damn excited, I got to tell you. We had finally hit pay dirt. We got to what we were looking for. And I would say that as we started to look at the photograph, but let me give you an idea of the photos before we go any further so your audience understands it. The original negatives were very large. We're talking about photos that are like 24 by 30, 24 by 32, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's the actual size of the thing. And the clarity was crystal clear, very high resolution stuff.
Very unlike what was in Leonard's book, which were very, very bad representations of these photos.
Yeah, when you reduce them in size, you're losing an awful lot of clarity. You follow me?
Yeah.
And when you make Xerox type copies of these things for publication, you're losing even more resolution.
Right.
That's why in Leonard's book, in addition to the photographs, he included a series of hand sketches.
Yes.
To show you what was in each photograph. See what I mean?
Yes.
Because he knew that the book was too small to actually see anything in those photos. But I got to tell you, the resolution was very high, very crystal clear. Your eyes did have to get acclimated because there's almost no color. There's no offsetting color. It's everything's sort of a dullish gray.
Right.
You know what I mean? On the surface.
Well, I have a series of lunar photos, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, there you go. Then you're with me. But and as I say, we started out very, very excited about this. But within the first minute or two, I got to tell you, it turned into a very quiet and a very solemn type occasion for us.
Why is that?
We knew what we were looking at, and we knew what it meant. And this wasn't a game anymore.
Okay, what were you looking at?
We were looking at, as best as I can remember from all of it now, the great majority of the stuff we saw looked like excavation type or construction equipment. Coming from the petrochemical industry, we were pretty familiar with building refineries and that type of stuff. And we know construction equipment. We were coordinating this with Leonard's book. There were pipelines. There were pipe fittings. There were certain pictures had what appeared to be some type of construction equipment. I can't say it's comparable to a bulldozer or anything like that, but it was earth-moving or moon-moving type equipment.
Now, Leonard, in his book, when he made statements about what he saw in the photographs, which apparently was artificial constructions,
mm-hmm,
with a definite intelligence behind it.
No question about it.
That they were huge.
Yeah, these things are extremely huge.
Now, we're not talking about a 30-foot bulldozer,
no,
are we?
No. So, in fact, that was one of the frustrating parts to us. On the back of each photo was the statistical data that you would need to calculate anything on the surface. For example, the back of the photo told you how high off the surface this picture was taken from, and on what angle, and what angle the sun was on, that sort of thing.
Right.
And it's simply a matter of simple everyday high school trigonometry to work out the numbers, and you can calculate how big this part is and how small that part. You follow me?
Yes.
But you can't do that in your head. You need pencil, paper, or calculators. Hell, even a slide rule would have done it.
And that's obviously what they were trying to keep you from doing.
We were not allowed to have any of that stuff. So we had to work with Leonard's book and take his word for it as to what the size of these things were. But I have to agree. We're talking stuff on a very large scale. We saw bridges. We saw a series of photos that had some cracks in the Canyon might look like from above, and bridges scanning these things, spanning these things, hyperbolic curves, maybe 7, 8, 9 miles apart. There's really no way for us to calculate the distance. We found rectangular structures filling the entire insides of round circular craters that looked like they were either under construction or very ancient. Very ancient.
Did
pipelines crossing over the rims, in and out, that type of thing.
Did the craters, were they named?
I think on the back it gave you that information. But again, there was too many of them we couldn't I don't think I remember any of them, to be honest with you, because this was like 16 years ago. But I do think all of the technical data was there, the names of the locations were there, and all of this stuff was there. And there was just no way to once your eyes got acclimated now, there was no way to not see it. There were all kinds of what he calls X-drones.
What Leonard calls.
Leonard calls X-drones, yeah.
Right.
To us, it reminded us of pipe fittings. And you could think of it as a large circular saw, if you will. It's a little X, you know what I mean?
Well, Vito, we're at the top of the hour.
Okay.
We've got to take a top of the hour break. I hate to stop here, but let me just ask you this.
Sure.
Did you see anything that resembled what we classically think of as a UFO?
Yes, we did. But it's not in the photos that showed up in Leonard's book.
Okay.